From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with your state and local news update. The wrongful death lawsuit against the Juneau police officer who fatally shot 34-year-old Kelly Stevens last year is over. Filings in the U.S. District Court of Alaska say both sides agreed last week to drop the case. The lawsuit was against Officer James Esbenshade, Police Chief Ed Mercer, and the City and Borough of Juneau. Stevens' family sued in July seeking damages and that the department improve its investigations into uses of force. State prosecutors reviewed the December 2019 shooting, and they reviewed it again after the plaintiff's attorneys highlighted audio from Esbenshade's body camera, claiming it showed he planned the killing. Both times, state prosecutors concluded Esbenshade's use of force was justified. Esbenshade's body camera and dashboard camera captured the fatal shooting. He was responding to a report of a gunshot at a housing complex. Within seconds of getting out of his car, Stevens repeatedly threatened to kill the officer while walking toward him and swinging a rope leash with a carabiner and chain attached to it. Esbenshade ordered him to stop three times, then shot Stevens once. In a press release, City Manager Rory Watt thanked the community for its patience as the reviews and the judicial process played out. He also expressed sympathy to Stevens' friends and family. Lawyers for the family were not yet ready to comment. In other news, the updated concept for a new arts facility in Juneau would expand Centennial Hall and could help boost the city's economic recovery. I spoke to Juneau's Public Works Director for this story. Public Works Director Katie Kester says the project is still in its early stages, but that it may serve as a community center, conference hall, and performing arts center to replace the current Juneau Arts and Culture Center, or JAC.
The JAC would be demolished and the Centennial Hall itself would be expanded and take on all those functions.
Kester says the concept is a different vision from the $4.5 million proposal for a standalone facility that voters rejected to fund in 2019. This one serves a broader purpose. She wrote in a memo that the COVID-19 pandemic and the resulting job losses also gives the community an opportunity to address the city's economic concerns. The Juneau Public Works and Facilities Committee met earlier this week to discuss asking the Assembly to spend $75,000 to pay an architect to further develop the concept, create a timeline and cost estimate, as well as finalizing the design. Kester noted that the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, Travel Juneau, and the Juneau Chamber of Commerce, who had opposed the previous ballot measure, are all on board. City Manager Rory Watt also says he's for it, too.
My take is that at this point in time, given that we have those three organizations working together collaboratively, agreeing on the process forward, that I definitely support the concept.
But Assemblymember Alicia Hughes-Scandes, who's also part of the Public Works Committee, had some reservations.
I have real concerns about this just because it feels like a little bit of a slap in the face of the voters who fairly recently and fairly decisively, if I remember, voted against a new JAC.
If the plan does move forward, it would still be up to voter approval. Kester says a question could be on the ballot as soon as October 2021.
So it's not a commitment to the project. It's really a commitment to exploring that concept with some more, you know, resources and just being able to do some public outreach.
The committee agreed to ask for approval of the $75,000 at the next assembly meeting. In Juneau, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña. Canadian developers behind a proposed massive metals mine 20 miles from the border seek another permit extension from BC regulators. If it's built, the KSM mine could be larger than the proposed Pebble mine in Bristol Bay. The company behind the project says the pandemic has delayed the progress. Critics argue that they're stalling, hoping to attract new investors. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, Alaska fishing interests and conservation groups are opposing the permit extension while state officials remain silent.
The KSM mine received approvals in 2014 on the condition that it break ground within 5 years. And it'd be built at a scale not seen before in this part of the world. At the end of its 52-year lifespan, it would be designed to hold back billions of tons of liquid mine tailings. 2 years ago, it received an extension, giving it until 2024 to start work. Now, citing the COVID pandemic, it's asked for another 2 years after that. Nikki Scoots heads Northern Confluence, a BC-based nonprofit that's critical of mine practices. She says BC authorities, similar to Alaska, have granted mine companies waivers to keep working as essential industries amidst the pandemic.
You know, maybe it cost more, maybe it was a bit more challenging, but we know that work did go underway this summer despite the pandemic.
The tailings storage facility would include dams holding back liquid mine waste. At its highest, more than 780 feet, there are some risks and liabilities.
You know, I imagine there's some risk aversion from some of the bigger players. They'd probably prefer to see, to invest in mines that might not have as risky tailings facilities.
Southeast Alaska fishermen have long been wary of transboundary mining because of potential impacts on habitat on salmon-producing rivers and streams.
The KSM mine is up the Yunik River.
Amy Daugherty heads Alaska Trollers Association.
You know, having low escapement year after year and having development up that very same river, it can, you know, shut us down.
Alaska and First Nation tribes have been monitoring mines being developed in BC's so-called Golden Triangle of mining projects on Southeast Alaska's doorstep. Rob Sanderson Jr. chairs the Southeast Alaska Indigenous Transboundary Commission.
Those tailing sites, you know, are going to be well over 600 feet high, and anything happens up there in that watershed, it's going to affect everything in our Southeast Alaska waterways.
In 2014, state regulators in Alaska registered concerns over potential impacts to fish habitat and water quality in the Yunak River watershed. In 2017, state officials followed up with a fact-finding mission over the border, which included a flyover of KSM and meeting with mine executives and regulators. But this month, during a 30-day comment period, the Dunleavy administration opted not to weigh in. State regulators say they reasoned a permit extension wouldn't alter the project. Jill Weitz is an activist with Salmon Beyond Borders in Juneau.
This inaction from the state of Alaska is doing a disservice to Alaska and Alaskans.
Weitz says if the extension is granted, it'd potentially allow the mine to be developed using a 12-year-old analysis.
Again, we maintain that the state of Alaska, the Dunleavy administration, should join our congressional delegation in the push for international binding solutions to this very much international problem.
The permit extension received two comments in favor. One was an anonymous email. The other came from a local mine consultant who's done work in the past for Seabridge Gold on a nearby mine. The company insists the mine can and will be built safely and responsibly. Seabridge Gold released a two-page statement arguing that the tailings facility would not impact water quality on the Alaska side of the border. Austin Williams of Trout Unlimited says it's understandable that British Columbia seeks to develop its mineral resources, but he says it's got to be done in a way that's responsible.
That doesn't put all of the burden and the risk on Alaskans and, you know, really gives us some certainty that if something goes wrong with the transboundary mines, that Alaskans aren't stuck paying the price.
BC's Ministry of Environment and Climate Change Strategy says Seabridge Gold will be required to respond to the written comments. If the ministry rejects the permit extension, Seabridge Gold still has until the summer of 2024 to find a partner and get started. Otherwise, it'd be back to the drawing board. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
In other news, more Alaska Natives have died of COVID-19 in the state of Alaska than whites, even though they make up 16% of the state's population. That's according to a recent analysis by the Department of Health and Social Services, which also shows that Native Hawaiians and Pacific Islanders are many times more likely than whites to die or be hospitalized from COVID. Alaska Medical Director Dr. Bob Anders says those disparities are the result of social and economic disparities, not genetic differences. He says it shows the need to invest more in things like housing and sanitation that will help these populations.
Equal access does not necessarily result in equitable outcomes. And that's sometimes hard for people outside you know, public health perspective to understand that we do have to invest in communities and people that are more at risk, and I think it'll benefit us all.
Anders is on the state's vaccine task force and says the data about inequities raises questions about vaccine allocation. This is KTOO News in Juneau.